The Ohio State University is seeking to trademark the word the. The Jeffrey Epstein case is making Wait a second. Can I use the word the? Do we get permission from Ohio State? Oh, they haven't gotten the trademark yet, so we're good to use it for now. All right. Moving on, the Jeffrey Epstein case is making conspiracy theorists of us all, and a lawyer was ordered to pay $370,000 for what might be considered the worst legal advice of all time. We will cover these stories, plus air part two of my interview with the funniest man in law, Sean Carter, at least that is, as long as you don't check with his wife on that matter, in this week's Debriefing of the Law. This past week, The Ohio State University filed a trademark application for the word the. Now, what in the heck is going on? I mean, I thought trademarking was only for cool and unique words and phrases like the Nike swoosh or orange poofy hair, but trademarking the word the? Well, the school is seeking to use the word the mainly on t-shirts, baseball caps, and hats, and apparently wants to keep the rest of the world from diluting and sullying their precious word. Well, Josh Gerben, who is a trademark lawyer, he is the one who discovered this application, and it's his opinion that the application, well, it has issues right out of the gate. In a video that he posted on Twitter, he said, in order for a trademark to be registered for a brand of clothing, the trademark must be used in a trademark fashion. In other words, it has to be used on tagging or labeling for the products. In this case, just putting the word the on the front of a hat or on the front of a shirt is not sufficient trademark use. All right, so what possibly would be a sufficient trademark use of the word the? Well, maybe having a t-shirt in Ohio State school colors with the word the, or maybe a football helmet with the word the on it. That might do the trick. But OSU has to do something to associate the word the to their product. Because believe it or not, OSU, but the word the, yeah, it's been used before. You're not the first ones to discover it. All right, one wonders if OSU is successful here. What's next? I mean, if they can trademark the word the, what else is fair game? Well, wait no more, because the University of Michigan, yes, OSU's bitter rival, has already responded in true rival form. They posted a picture with the word of in huge letters on the top of the Michigan M to emphasize that they are the University of Michigan. All right, well, trademarking the and of, I mean, come on, what's next? The period, I mean, for myself, I want dibs on the exclamation point. Apparently, I like to write in a shouting form. Now, I am not a conspiracy theorist. In fact, I often assume the exact opposite of any conspiracy theory is probably what actually happened. No, Elvis is not alive living in some tropical resort with JFK. It's probably the exact opposite. Yeah, he's probably in Kansas with Marilyn Monroe. But nonetheless, this whole Jeffrey Epstein death, yeah, it's making a conspiracy theorist out of me. And here's why. This was one conspiracy theory that was called before the actual event occurred. And yet the event still occurred as predicted by the conspiracy. I mean, it does not normally happen in this order. I mean, this would be like let's just say it's a week before the big football game and every national news agency is reporting on this conspiracy of the Patriots deflating footballs. I mean, suppose it was the headline of every news report. ESPN is reporting that Tom Brady instructs his ball boys to deflate game balls. TMZ reports, hey, Tom Brady likes soft balls. I mean, everyone is talking about it and everyone has their angle. So have that be your context. And then suppose that the next Sunday, the Patriots then stole the bag of game balls and deflated them. No, conspiracy theories do not happen in this order. The conspiracy over Vincent Foster's alleged suicide was not announced a month before his suicide. Well, let's take a look at the facts as we know them in this case. All right, well, Jeffrey Epstein's cellmate was moved out on Friday, a day before the alleged suicide. Now, call me naive, but if a person was recently put on suicide watch, yeah, I'm thinking alone time is not the best call here, right? It's not the best game plan. Again, I am not a medical professional, but my wife does watch a lot of the medical dramas on TV. So yeah, I think I know some things, and I think I'm right on this one. Well, speaking of suicide watch, he was apparently put on watch near the end of July after it appeared he attempted suicide. And according to some reports, he was then inexplicably removed from that watch within a few weeks. Folks, that was some seriously fast therapy work. Okay, let's see here, sir. You've been in to see me now 2 times? Yeah, I think you're good. Let's just stay away from the sharp edges, and I think you should be fine. Yeah, that's not how it normally works. Well, the Washington Post is now reporting that the autopsy reports show that Epstein had broken neck bones. And they reported that these broken bones, while theoretically possible with a hanging, is a lot more common and makes more sense with a strangulation. And I would add that this would not have been a normal situation for a hanging. This was a jail cell without high beams or rope for that matter. I am thinking the broken neck bones are a bit odd here in this case. And let's not forget the biggest fact. Several high-profile, powerful names have been tied to Epstein. You got Trump, the Clintons, Prince Andrew. I mean, Prince Andrew? So now you've implicated the Queen's boy? I mean, man, you don't mess with Mama Bear and expect to live, do you? Well, forget Suicide Watch. He should have been on a pay-per-view watch. The whole world should have been paying attention to this guy. Well, it's not as if this jail was the one in Mayberry where Otis could check himself in and out on the honor system. Oh, I loved Andy Griffith and Mayberry, but no, this was not a jail cell like that. This was the MCC Manhattan. Sounds like it could be a yacht somewhere, maybe a really big cruise ship. The MCC Manhattan is one kick-butt jail. Now, this is where the 1993 World Trade Center bomber was put. So, you know, that's got to mean it's a pretty good jail. El Chapo was also held there. It's supposed to have the strictest security and be tougher than Guantanamo Bay and Alcatraz. I mean, come on here. Hollywood made a movie about escaping the Rock, but not the MCC Manhattan. I mean, come on, nobody would buy that storyline, and fiction has to make sense. Well, so call me intrigued in the slightest. I am not a conspiracy theorist yet. I tend to believe that human incompetence is usually the culprit, but this case very well might make me want to travel to Area 51 and look for Elvis. Now, there are some holes. There are some holes in the story. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Also, last week, a lawyer was ordered to pay his client $370,000 for giving what possibly could be deemed the worst legal advice of all time. In fact, consider this number one on our list of most idiotic legal advice ever given. Now, I just started this list today, but hey, this is number one on that list. Yeah, there's not a number two yet, but I guess stay tuned for future podcasts and we will cover those in due time. Well, this case is noteworthy for a couple of reasons. First, the level of stupidity of this lawyer, and secondly, it's always a bit odd to see money flowing in this direction. I mean, it's the normal course of events that money flows from the client to the lawyer. That's how God intended it to occur. But here, the money is flowing upstream, which means, yeah, it's a bit irregular. This might be one of those wrinkle in time moments for you Doctor Who fans, of which I am. You know, you see a wrinkle in time. Yeah, okay, money is flowing the wrong direction. I get it. Well, here's what happened. Eon Christensen charged his clients nearly $800 for a patient identification card, which he said would prevent his clients from being arrested for growing or possessing illegal marijuana. Now, I hate to break it to you, to get out of jail free card, that's only in Monopoly and not in real life. Now, this was all done in Florida before Florida passed a constitutional amendment allowing for medical marijuana. So the focus here, again, is on the word, this was an illegal activity. So despite the fact that the law criminalized it, Christensen gave his clients medical cards, which I am sure he probably just printed those off of his computer, and these cards were titled Official Legal Certification. I guess if it says so, it must be true. Well, he gave his clients signs. Get this. He gave his clients signs to put in front of their homes, announcing that their home was being used to grow marijuana. So not only was he advising his clients to break the law, but he then suggested it would be a great idea to put a sign in front of the house announcing the illegal activity. I mean, someone gave this guy a law degree. Well, a raid of his office would probably also have turned up a bank robbery cash here sign, or possibly a dead body on board sign for the car. I mean, who knows what else he is trying to get his clients to advertise. Well, in January of 2015, police went to the client's residence after a 911 caller reported the couple as having a marijuana grow sign outside of their home. I think a such sign does count towards probable cause. I think a warrant is likely to be issued when you do have a sign out front of your house saying, yeah, we're doing illegal activity, just follow the signs. Well, a couple asked Christensen if they should get rid of their pot plants. But he informed them that, no, you're just fine. All right, now right here, I'm thinking, if I were this attorney, I might start doubting my legal advice. You know, when the cops are calling you because there's a sign out front saying, you know, enter here to find your marijuana plants, I'm thinking that might be a good time to reassess my legal advice. Well, he didn't. And a month later, a SWAT team raided the client's home, and they were arrested on charges of possession with intent to sell. So, and probably a no shocker to any of you, the client then sued Christensen for really crappy legal advice, and he was ordered to pay them nearly $370,000. Now, what happened to the client's criminal case? Well, after their arrest, the couple dropped Christensen as their lawyer. Now, this probably was not a surprise to the attorney. I'm sure he saw this one coming. When a client takes your advice to put a sign up in front of their house announcing a criminal activity and then is arrested for said criminal activity, I'm thinking you're losing that client. Yeah, so they hired a new attorney, pleaded guilty, and received 3 years probation and a $15,000 fine and 100 hours of community service. It is a bit ironic that medical marijuana was then legalized in Florida 1 year after this arrest. Talk about bad timing. Maybe the attorney actually was a Doctor Who and just forgot what time dimension he was in when he gave the advice. See, I'm sorry, fellas. I'm really sorry. I thought I put in 2016 on my TARDIS, and that was after the law was passed. I'll make sure the TARDIS has the correct time the next time. Time for our Supreme Court review. As I mentioned last week, the Supreme Court justices like to laugh. Many of them are really, well, they are stand-up comics with great punchlines and comedic timing. We here at Comedian of Law have gone through now 15 years of Supreme Court cases, and we have documented every time that there has been laughter at the High Court. If it's funny and involves nine adults wearing robes and boofing, well, we know about it, and we're going to cover it. Well, today let's cover another case from this past term, Mitchell v. Wisconsin. Now, nothing beats a little sarcasm from the bench, and in Mitchell, well, the transcript was dripping with sarcasm. First, let's start with some of the facts. All right, in 2013, Gerald Mitchell was arrested for driving while stone cold drunk. I mean, he was stone cold creamed. How creamed, you ask? Well, even Charlie Sheen would have said, dude, you gotta slow down. Maybe we should just cut you off. So the arresting officer took Mitchell to the hospital to get his blood drawn. Now, Wisconsin has a pretty interesting implied consent law concerning blood draws. You see, when you get a Wisconsin driver's license, you are actually consenting to a blood draw if you're ever pulled over and suspected of partying with, well, let's just say Ron White and Charlie Sheen. If that's what they suspect, well, you, by getting your driver's license, you have consented to a blood draw. Now, these implied consent laws have been upheld because a person can always, withdraw their consent later. But what if a person is so drunk that they passed out and can't withdraw their consent? Well, that's a good question, because that is the issue here in this case. Because when the cops started reading Mitchell his rights about the implied consent, they weren't getting a response. Turns out Mitchell was stone cold passed out. He was unconscious. Because Mitchell couldn't withdraw his consent, he was snoring. The police officer went ahead and had his blood drawn anyways. Hey, you know, just tell me if you object. Just give me a sign. Yeah, no, okay. Hearing no objection. Here, take this needle. Well, his blood alcohol content was 0.222. Yeah, that's high. I mean, if he were playing for the Kansas City Royals, I believe that would lead the team in batting average. Yeah, it is that high. So the question that the Supreme Court took up was, under the Fourth Amendment, which is the law that requires a warrant before unreasonable searches and seizures, can the cops do a blood draw from an unconscious motorist? I mean, it's kind of hard to withdraw consent when you are asleep, and so that is the issue the Supreme Court took up. So let the sarcasm begin. Talking about how a person can withdraw the consent, notorious RBG, well, she had this thought.
Against this precise type of intrusion.
Suppose he had a card on his windshield that says, if I'm unconscious, I do not consent to a blood draw.
Great idea. And while you're at it, might as well say, and no searching the trunk either. Ignore those flies in that stench. There's nothing to see in the trunk. Well, the Chief Justice John Roberts, perhaps thinking RBG was onto something, he added this.
May always withdraw it.
Well, there may not be consent, but you'd have pretty good evidence, wouldn't you?
Pretty
I
good
evidence. You have a card saying he's anticipating being unconscious while he's driving.
Well, that would certainly be helpful. That would certainly be helpful.
Give that guy a mic so he can drop it. Boom, exit stage left. But the biggest laugh came when Justice Sotomayor was drilling the petitioner about the constitutional limitations on invading a person's body. Let's listen.
That the state can't extract a condition that's more invasive than reasonably necessary for its needs?
I think
blood draw is different than searching somebody's home. Intrusive as searching someone's home is, invading someone's body is a different level of intrusion.
I agree with you, and
that's
why I think
you've come up with some good arguments there. But
and the crowd loses it. Our chief was on fire. Seriously, I think for all future confirmation proceedings, we need the justices to do 5 minutes of stand-up time. Let's have them do open mic night so we can assess their comedic chops. Well, the court ruled 5-4, so it was a close one, in favor of Wisconsin. So to all you drivers in Wisconsin, you might want to read the fine print on your driver's license application. Who knows what else you have consented to. Well, last week we aired part one of my interview with the funniest man in law, Sean Carter. If you missed it, go check it out. He was a classmate at Harvard with one Barack Hussein Obama. Maybe you've heard of him. He has stories that he almost could have told. You don't want to miss that interview. Check it out. That was last week's episode. Now let's go to part two of this interview. Well, he will explain how to go viral with your social media post. Now, I assume if you are like any middle-aged guy, I'm middle-aged, you live for the social media like. I mean, if I post something on Facebook, let's say, my self-worth, my identity as a human being is based on how many people will click on that blue thumbs up button and give me a like. And if I'm telling you, if I get a red heart or a laughing emoji, oh man, my ego becomes almost unbearable to live with or be around. But Sean, well, he has a story where he started out with a Facebook post. The end result, he ended up on CNN. That, my friends, is a post gone viral. Well, here's Sean. All right, well, let's go back to our story about how to go viral. And I found out that you had a story, and all of a sudden, there's Sean Carter on CNN telling your story. Now, Sean, I would love to go on CNN. The closest I've come is I was on a Bill O'Reilly show at one point in time. But nonetheless, yeah, not as near as good a story as you have. But tell me the story of CNN. How did you get on CNN? What happened?
So what happened was, is that, and it's interesting, I spend way too much time, all right, on Facebook writing long posts. I have written the equivalent of an encyclopedia, I think, on Facebook. And so I've always had these long posts. This post, by the way, is like two paragraphs. So, all right, we were getting ready to sit down to watch something with the kids. I believe it was wrestling. And I just had this. So I went out to the front door to get some packages. And there was an Amazon package on the front doorstep. And so I shout to my wife. I'm like, baby, why is this package, you know, still out here? It's been out here for like 2-3 days. And she says, well, it's addressed to someone else. And I've called Amazon to pick it up. And my thought was, well, yeah, if it's addressed to someone else, why don't I just go ahead and go take it to them, right?
Right.
And then I looked at it and I was like, no, I can't do that. It's not on my block. It's the block over. I live in a gated community here in Arizona. Now, that's not an indication of being rich, all right? All of our communities are gated because the old people will run away if not. Right? So you got to have some way to keep it.
You keep the old people in, all right?
Right. But it is a nice neighborhood, and I am one of the very, very few African-American people in the neighborhood. And going, you know, the block over, I wasn't going to walk. And I thought about sending my kids, but I just heard a story the week before about some kid who gets lost on the way to school. A black kid stops at a house to knock. He asks for directions. It's a 15-year-old kid. The homeowners there see him, freak out. Guy pulls out a gun. The kid runs away, takes a shot at him. That guy actually went to prison. Wow. And it's like, it's just too dangerous to send my kids. And I just put it up on Facebook and said, hey, you know, by the way, I just had this idea about this package. I'm not going to take it. It's going to sit here until UPS gets it because I just, you know, it's the world's too dangerous. All right, to be black kids and not poor. All right, and that was it. Didn't think anything of it. And it starts to go viral. I say viral, I mean like 200,000 likes on the internet, like, you know, 100,000 shares. And I'm watching this thing. Now, normally when I post something, especially at this time, 20 people might like it, 50.
Yeah, that's a good day, right? If I get a couple likes, I'm talking it up, man.
I'm watching this thing, and you know how you get the notifications? The notifications all, if, you know, it says 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 8, 9. It's thousands, right? And it's just, you know, over and over comments. Now, that would have been
interesting. Now, Sean, how long did it take for it to go hit that kind of level?
Oh, here's the weird part is, immediately, well, I shouldn't say it. It was, and I can tell you exactly what it was, because it's like this happens to me every Tuesday. So I did this on a Friday night. Friday night's not a busy night on Facebook. People have lives. And there are immediately within the first hour or so, like 300 or so likes or shares. And I'm thinking, wow. Now, I've had actually posts before that point, you know, maybe shared a couple thousand times.
Right.
And I don't think much of it. I go to bed, and I have a 7 a.m. webinar. Get up at 5 a.m. and, you know, come into the office. And I'm looking at my phone at about 6 a.m. and the numbers start jumping. I guess people wake up for the morning. And I mean, I'd say between the time I woke up and, you know, 2 hours later, it probably had like 1,000 or 2,000 shares. And now I'm like, wow. And during the course of the day, it's just, you know, climbing.
You're
now,
teaching a class, and as you're teaching a class, your numbers are going up and up and up.
Right. So and so I did like a 2-hour class, and I went back again, and it was like from 3 to 9,000.
Okay.
Whoa. And so over the course of the day, you know, by the midday Saturday, it's doing like 7,000-8,000, you know, people sharing this thing an hour. And I have to turn off notifications for it. Because it's comments. Now, by the way, I turn off notifications for two reasons. One, because that's all I would have done. And two, more importantly, because it's going viral, but not necessarily for the best reason.
Okay.
Because about 3/4 of the people are really mad at me. And they are offended They think I've called everybody in my neighborhood a racist, and they're calling me all kinds of a coward. And I would prefer if they used the coward word.
Okay.
It really would have been a nicer word than they were using. So it's just
going viral for some of the bad reasons.
It's like, so imagine if you had gotten, you know, what you always wanted, that kind of attention, 200,000 comments on something. And actually, I'm wrong, something about 70,000 comments. But 65,000 of them are people who hate your guts. All right. And then, you know, you start getting, you know, then I start getting the weirdest comments, though, because I found out, and this is an important lesson to learn. The lesson I learned from that has nothing to do with race relations in America or anything like that. The lesson to be learned is this. You need to get people their Amazon packages. I had people, and I'm not kidding, literally either look me up and call me, or send me, you know, emails or personal messages offering to come to my home and take that package to its rightful owner. Because
really?
The most important thing in the world is that people get their Apple iPhone chargers, right? I mean, this wasn't a big screen TV, right? The package, if you see the picture, it's a little box. It's basically, and it weighed, you know, ounces. I'm absolutely convinced it was an iPhone charger because those things go out every hour, right?
Right.
And these people were going, you know, I had a guy offering to drive 30 miles each way because he could not sleep that night until these people got their package. Eventually, it got to be so bad, I took it to, right, like, you know, the UPS store. And okay. Said, here, just take this damn package.
So you took it to the UPS store and just said, you guys redo this.
Yeah, absolutely. You're like, just redeliver this to the right place, right?
All right.
Turns out, I don't think it was actually UPS. I wasn't looking very carefully because the guy was very confused. But he was like, I'll take it because you look very confused. But they eventually got it where it went to. Or they didn't. I don't know.
Right.
It wasn't important. But it was interesting because, you know, that took off. And then so it starts being the topic of radio shows.
Okay.
Around Phoenix. And so now people are calling me like, hey, you got to turn on, you know, station 1070. Everyone hates you on there. And so now I'm getting all this. And then I get a call from the Michael Mirkonish show. And he has a daily radio show and then a Saturday morning show on CNN. And so they spent Friday, his listeners yelling at me on the Michael Mirkonish show. And Saturday, I go into a studio and, you know, and do the little CNN bit. And it turns out that even though you're a humorist, people don't always take humor or don't always, I guess, expect humor. And so it was a very awkward interview because I'm being me. Right.
Well, no, I watched that interview and I got to tell you, as someone who tries to use humor to communicate points, I thought you did a smashing job. I know you had a real positive message on race relations. You wanted to get out there and you used humor to do it. And I thought it was very effective. You're saying you got some negative feedback from that.
I haven't been called back because I knew CNN was going to call me for my own show after this one, right? And Smirkanish looks to be like remember, right, because I use the old people in the, you know, in the gated community line, right?
Right.
And he was like, audience, I didn't say that. He said that. I just said, I don't want the fat letters.
Oh my goodness, John, I'm on the floor laughing over here. That is hilarious. I love that line.
I did. Exactly. So I don't think that's going to be, I'm going to be going back on CNN, but that's other networks. So no big deal. I think I'm going to get a spot on Nickelodeon if I can. I think the kids will appreciate it a little better.
There's always Netflix for us.
Netflix is giving out specials to anyone, aren't they?
Right.
If you and I don't get a special this year, we need to quit. This is ridiculous.
Exactly. I hear the Law Hawk is going to get a special on Netflix. Show, so. All right.
You might deserve one.
Well, so Sean, you had that experience. So is there a lesson you learned from that as far as how things go viral that you can speak to in America?
Well, here's the thing that's interesting is, yes, and so that was one of two viral video posts I had in 2018. I had one at the end of the year. Remember when Justice Ginsburg fell in the office and hospitalized?
Yeah, right.
And so I wrote an open letter to the clerks. And in the letter, I basically said to dear, you know, RBG's clerks, you people are slipping. You cannot let the Blessed Ruth get hurt at work. So from now on, she is not to walk anywhere herself. All right.
Okay.
Back ride, or if necessary, you know, put her in one of those little things that suburban wives use to carry the babies. But you carry the Ruth around from now on.
That's right.
Also, I don't want to hear about her standing in line somewhere with a tray. You get her food for her, and you need to cut it up finely, or you know what? Forget that. You chew it baby bird style, and right. You feed it to her.
Right. You sent this to her clerks?
I just wrote an open letter on Facebook.
Okay, all right.
And that one, you know, it went viral again, another 100,000+, you know, shares or you know, likes or whatever. The funny thing is, it then got picked up by Above the Law. Now, by the way, I've told you the PC version of that post. The post started out with you bleepy bleeps are slipping, and I spelled out the bleepy bleeps.
I see.
And here's what I found out. That is the way to go viral. All right. If you want to go viral, you must have at least one MF and two other swear words of your choice in any post. By the way, the CNN post also had at the end a very choice swear word. And I found out that it's the only way to go viral. And I remember my mother calling me and saying, baby, you know, I see all this stuff. My friends are telling me about this. And do you have to use that language?
This does not pass the mother test.
And I was like, but my mother, that MF isn't going viral. So she don't know what to
Lessons of Virility from Andrew Dice Clay. I like that. Drop a couple F bombs.
The thing is, it's amazing though, and I've seen it all the time now, is that we have a, you know, the language has just become so much more coarse in recent years among everyone. And if I were to go on Facebook right now, I'd tell you there'd be 30 posts with, you know, some of, not just, you know, we used to have, you know, the S word, right? And damn, those would be words that used to get a gasp. You can't even get anyone's attention with that anymore. Okay. You got to go to the top shelf. All right. of profanity. And I, you know, I mean grandmothers, little old ladies, everybody. And so it is it's a different world. You know, fortunately that has not slipped into my CLE yet. I'd still like that gig. That's the thing I have to admit though, and I don't know if you've had that thing, and maybe it's been good for you. One of the things that drove me to CLE is that I did not use enough profanity to do stand-up comedy.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. Yeah.
And I think you understand, you know, as a comedian the same way. It's like, you know, you and I go to a comedy club and people are like, what is this?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Am I watching Comedy Central? I came here, you know, to hear some stuffy stuff, bleep, 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 bleep. And so that was one of the things I always was like, okay, I'm not going to use profanity. My mother came to my first few shows.
Okay.
Right. I can't, you know, do that. And so my grandmother came to my first show. So it's like, I can't, you know, and so I was always, you know, it worked out, I guess, in the sense that, you know, I was going to have a short career in stand-up comedy unless I learned to diversify.
Yes, yes. Here's the lesson to the would-be comics out there. Anyone can make anyone else laugh by telling a dirty joke. That's pretty simple, pretty easy to do. But if you can make someone laugh being clean, and now you're in the corporate world, and that's where the money is, at least that's one perspective on it, I guess.
Well, no, exactly. And, you know, and by money, it's interesting because, you know, it's like everything else in America. We take winner take all. So, you know, as far as like a, you know, a Seinfeld, right, a Chris Rock, you know, a Kevin Hart, I'm an absolute pauper, right? It's embarrassing. But, you know, the corporate world does allow me to have, you know, a nice, you know, a little better middle class lifestyle, right? I get to live with the old people, you know, behind the gates.
That's right. Right? Keep you locked up.
And, you know, because, you know, the way it works normally with comedy is it's like you have a few, you know, superstars, and then everyone else is sleeping on someone else's couch.
That's right. That is so. Let me ask you your thoughts here on this. Star Wars. Are you a Star Wars fan?
I've seen a few of them.
All right. So Star Wars episode, I'm going to call it 2. I know some people would say it's maybe Star Wars 5, but nonetheless, it's the one where Han Solo gets frozen in carbonite. They do that, and he's kept alive. You remember that episode? Uh-huh. Have you seen Notorious RBG in public recently?
No, and you know what? I support a full weekend at Bernie's, as long as we have to do it.
I'm just saying, she went back to her house to work. How long will she be working out of her house? I'm thinking for a long time to come, but nonetheless.
I'm pleading the fifth because I'm not telling if it is the case.
Just some observations I am making along the way. All right,
here's the thing is that you know, and I think this is a real point is that we really, and I know you're gonna get whatever emails, but we should really think about an age limit for some of these jobs.
All right.
And that sounds ageist or whatever, but I gotta tell you, we do that for anything else. We won't let you be postman after 70.
Right.
Let you deliver the damn mail. And here's the thing about it is, there is no such thing as mail, right? Nothing in the mail comes as important at all, and we don't even trust you to deliver the circulars.
That's right.
But we trust you to make a decision about the future.
So are you saying you cannot be a Supreme Court Justice until you reach the age of 80? Exactly what it looks like the requirement is.
That seems to be the requirement now, but I'd like to switch that and reverse it. And basically have a time where you just simply – and, you know, here's the challenge in the past that we've always had these expectations that people will just sort of step down, right, and at the right time. And it's like, no, we should actually have a rule about this because we have the rule about that everywhere else.
Yes, that makes sense. I mean, hey, if there's a rule like that when it comes to football and basketball, maybe we should have it for our Supreme Court justices as well. Speaking of the Supreme Court justices, did you know they have a hazing tradition at the Supreme Court?
Really? Does it involve boofing?
No. Here's what the most junior member of the court, so the newest justice, he is the one who has to be responsible, or he serves as the chairperson for the Supreme Court Cafeteria Committee. Do you realize what that means? Before Kavanaugh, you had Gorsuch, who was in charge of the Supreme Court brownie platter. let me see if I get this straight. He had the justice from Colorado being in charge of the brownie plot.
That's not bad. I'm gonna have to stop by the cafeteria next time I'm in DC. Kavanaugh too. I mean, who knows what Kavanaugh put in it?
What do you mean? Who knows? You know what they're gonna have. Who doesn't like beer? Come on, that's what you're gonna have now. All right. Well. Speaking of observations, I want you to comment on this observation. So I'm working on this theory. It's called debriefing the law. There is freedom in going commando. So the whole idea there is that the more that you understand the limitations of the law, there's some freedom in that. There's some freedom to how you act and how you treat other people. So I'm not going to ask you, Sean, if you think there's freedom in going commando, but I also want to give you a hypothetical. Let's say that your appendix is bursting, all right? It's middle of the night, and your wife is rushing you to the hospital. Okay. But she comes to a stoplight, and she stops, and your appendix is bursting. You feel like you're about ready to die, and you're stuck at a stoplight. And you go, "Hun, could you please run the stoplight?" And she says, "No, I can't do that. That is the law." What is your take on that?
I would have called an Uber.
You wouldn't have trusted your wife to drive you to the hospital?
No. I've got too much life insurance for that. If I had any more life insurance, I'd sleep with one eye open.
We are worth way more dead than alive. I get that.
The funny part about that, in all seriousness, is I could see that being my wife. She is very good about the rules. All right. Which, by the way, is funny because the one of us that decided to go to law school was the one who always thinks rules are for girls. Right. And so we did it backwards. She would have been an excellent lawyer.
I agree with that one.
Yeah, she's very I can see us having that argument, literally.
Oh, my. Yeah. And so, you know what? That's interesting you mentioned that, because this actually was a true story that happened to a friend of mine. And that was exactly, there was an argument between the husband and the wife about what should happen with that stoplight.
Oh, yeah. No, I could definitely see we'd be at that light for quite a while until it turned. It's interesting, though, because I'm learning as I get older that rules are not as bad as I thought they were.
What do you mean by that?
And I'll give a good example. It goes back, we sort of full circle with what we were talking about earlier with lawyers, with clients. We have a rule that the lawyers can't sleep with the clients, right?
Right.
For those of you who are not lawyers, you understand this is the proudest part about being a lawyer, probably the greatest thing about our profession, is that we have a rule. And the reason that makes our profession great is that it proves definitively that lawyers are very sexy.
I like your take on that.
All right, think about it. Nobody else has a profession except for doctors, but hardly anyone else, the heating and air conditioning guy, the pizza delivery guy, none of these people have a rule about this because they're not sexy. No one's going to try to sleep with them. But the thought is that every lawyer is so persuasive and attractive and magnetic that we need to have a bright line rule that protects the client from our sexiness.
I'm tracking with you.
In most jurisdictions. Now, some jurisdictions, they don't have them. Georgia, you've seen those people. They don't have a rule, all right? The policy of the Georgia State Bar is if you can get it, go for it. But that's not the point here. The point is simply this, in all of that, is that, you know, oftentimes lawyers break this rule, and here's the problem is that they think, you know what, I don't need a rule here, right? We're grown people. We could work this out. And by definition, that relationship is almost always coercive. When the complaints come back, I think the lawyers half time are surprised that there's a complaint. Like, what do you mean? I thought she loved me. And it's like, no, fool, you had her last $4,000 for a retainer, right? She needed you to get away from the person she hated even more.
Right.
So, and one of the reasons, great reasons I say rules are rules, it's like, look, that's a rule where you just need to, even if you don't understand it, you just need to follow it. Right. Even if you don't think it applies in your case, you just need to follow it. And sometimes, so for instance, like stop sign, there might be that argument, right? That even though it doesn't look like there's anybody there, you might just need to sit there until the 30 seconds or whatever, because we do know, right, that every once in a while someone will, you know, try to run that light, and it works out bad for everybody.
I like that take on it. I just I have to agree with you. I do think that there is a reason for that rule, and we as lawyers just too sexy, I guess, for our own good. I mean, I haven't gotten past that.
You know, the thing that cracks me up is the few states, you know, because when it comes down, it's like an ABA model rule, and then every state gets sort of, they don't have to take it all or nothing. They get to just sort of, as the kids would say these days, freestyle, sample, you know, to do a la carte. Take a little bit of this, take a little bit of that. And there are states that literally looked there and made a decision and said, you know what? Nope. We should still be able to get us a little, you know, something, something on the side. And it's like, how do you as a grown person make that decision where they went out of their way to allow something, right, that seems to be so ridiculous?
Oh, man, I have no idea. I will say this, though. I did a review of movies, legal movies, because I was trying to find some material for my class. And you know what I noticed? The number one most sought after person. So when Hollywood was going to cast a prototypical male lawyer, you know who they picked? Matthew McConaughey.
McConaughey, I know. I said the same thing. He's been like three or four of them, right?
Who knew we were such good looking guys? I had no idea we were such good looking guys. But now that you mentioned this, it all makes sense.
Every one of us. Every one of us. Even Scalia. Let's fight
that. So finally here, Sean, I know you have seen the legal profession inside and out, all the funny side of it, the non-funny side of it. So what is your advice to anyone considering the legal profession? I'm going to give you the final word.
That is one of those things. this is my opinion today, January 30th of 2019, and I'll give you the time. Let's see, 4:02 Eastern time, because by 5:02 Eastern time, it'll be a completely different opinion. But generally, and by 6:02, it'll be even different than that. But generally speaking, all right, this is a wonderful profession if you really, really decide that you want to be a lawyer. And what I mean by that is, so oftentimes we tell people, well, get a law degree. It never hurts. You could go into anything. And we end up getting people with a lot of debt, all right?
Right. So that's what you get.
Who don't want to necessarily be lawyers. But I think, you know, if you want to be a lawyer, and it doesn't even matter, you know, which kind, in the sense that, you know, if you want to do civil rights work, right? Work like the work you do for religious organizations, religious freedom. If you have a cause, something that you're committed to, there's no better profession, because you actually have the ability to go into the courts and, you know, remake the world into whatever, you know, you think it should be. But that general idea, like, oh, no, you know, you can use it for a business career, et cetera. You know, too many people, myself included, right, were kind of taught, hey, a law degree never hurts. And to me, it's like, yeah, it never hurts. But you know what? It never hurts, you know, to get a medical degree either. But don't do it, right? Unless you want unless you want to cut open somebody, don't do it.
That's right. And hey, life is short. Enjoy the journey. I have heard it said by one person that you should never take life too seriously. You'll never get out of life if you do. Well, nonetheless, thank you so much, John, for coming on here and being my guest today in our show. I appreciate it, and we will talk later. But thank you so much for being on today. Well, thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a 5-star review. We need your love to help us continue highlighting the funnier side of the law. I want to give a special shout out to our Vice President of Operations, Wendy Oster, without whom, well, let's face it, this entire operation would be a mess and I would still have to have a real job. Our marketing team, Red Bird Solutions, and Leanne Holmberg for spreading the good word about us. Not the easiest thing to do. And Sean Nguyen and 15.5 Features for making me sound way better than I actually do. Oh, and don't let me forget Ryan Kuhn and Paul Kuhn of Triplicity Marketing for our technical and computer support.